This is Remnant Bride Radio, bringing to you Time with Gary, a common man with an uncommon understanding. Now, from RemnantBrideRadio.com, here's Gary Naylor.
Hi, this is Gary Naylor. Let's spend some time together. Beginning in 1 Corinthians 1, verse 27, we read, "But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to shame the wise, and God has chosen the weak things of the world to shame the things which are strong. And the base things of the world and the despised God has chosen, the things that are not, that he may nullify the things that are." In chapter 2, verse 14 and 15, we also read, "But a natural man does not accept the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness to him, and he cannot understand them, because they are spiritually appraised. But he who is spiritual appraises all things, yet he himself is appraised by no one." There are things that have taken place in my life, things that I attribute to Yahweh. And I will be quite honest, they are sometimes very frustrating to me. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. Several years ago, Yahweh was beginning to unfold to me the understanding of the curse of 1920. And what he was dealing with me about was getting to the root of this curse. And that was my focus, getting to the root of the curse of 1920. I was out in the backyard in Washington State, and I walked by our garden, which I had not planted in a couple of years. On the outside edge of it in the yard was a weed that was rather large. It was almost 2 feet in diameter, and I don't like weeds, and so I reached down to grab a hold of it and pull it up. It was a weed that was flat on the ground, and I grabbed one of the branches and pulled, and it broke off. And so I thought, well, I'm going to have to really get a hold of this. And I reached down deep into the ground, into the grass, grabbed the taproot, and pulled. And as I pulled, that root just kept coming and coming and coming, and I pulled out a taproot 2 feet long. When that happened, I marveled at it, and my immediate response was actually frustration. I thought, oh, wonderful. Now, I have to decide whether this was Yahweh God performing a miracle, or was it just a happenstance? And it really frustrated me that this happened. But I could not deny the impossibility, or you could say the unlikelihood, of pulling a taproot out of solid ground. This was not in the garden. Pulling a taproot out of the ground that was 2 feet long. I mean, you tell me, how many times have you grabbed a weed with a 2 foot long taproot and pull it out of the ground? No, always it's broken off right at the top. And so it frustrated me that Yahweh would do this, because now I had to decide whether this was Yahweh God or just a fluke. And I didn't want to make something out of it that was not there. But I did bring the plant in. I laid it out on the floor by the fireplace, and I dried it so that I could keep it. In fact, as I'm sharing this with you, it's right here in front of me. It's on the wall. I kept it. It has often been my prayer, particularly in times of disappointment or discouragement, it has often been my prayer that Yahweh God would use me to get to the root of the curse of 1920. Because that curse is destroying this nation. It has corrupted the church. It has corrupted society. It has destroyed the family. It is destroying the kingdom of God. And we talked about that somewhat in the last time that we were together. Getting to the root of the curse of 1920 is critical. And so I look at this plant here in front of me, and I take hope that Yahweh is going to use this man to get to the root of the curse in 1920. You see, that itself is an extremely foolish thing, pulling a plant out of the ground. Would Yahweh God really do that? I do take hope that he gave that as a testimony that he would do the impossible. Because you don't pull a 2-foot taproot out of the ground under normal circumstances. He used something foolish, pulling a weed out of the ground, to hopefully speak to what he is going to do. And there are other examples in my life, and I want to share one with you right now that is most recent. I was sitting on the floor in my bedroom, and I need brain breaks every now and then. For me, a brain break is just to sit down on the floor, get a deck of cards, which I've had for many years, and you will see here after a while, or whenever you get through this broadcast, or during it if you stop. You'll understand what I mean by this in just a minute. But I was sitting on the floor playing with this deck of cards, a hand of solitaire. I play free cell and solitaire. They're wonderful games because what you have is disharmony, and what you're trying to do is bring them into harmony. I really enjoy that. It's something that can be accomplished within a matter of a few minutes, and that's not been my experience in life. There are still many things in disharmony. So in a matter of a few minutes, I can bring disharmony and chaos into harmony. And as I was sitting there playing that card game, I was thinking about Yahweh and what he's going to do. And of course, we've got November 2 coming up, where we have the hope of the Congregational Pentecost, where from June 7 of this 2009 to November 2, we have 349-day periods, and we hope that on November 2, we're going to see a consummation of this conjugal act that took place on June 7. And quite frankly, to the natural man, what we were noting is it's equally foolish, because we went there to establish a covenant, which was on the 40th anniversary of my consummation of a marriage with my wife. And all I know to do, and I'm going to expand here just a little bit if you'd allow me, all I knew to do was to walk between these two brothers. And then it was added, well, no, we will walk between these two rows of eight people, so that it's like in Genesis 15, it's laying out the covenant parts. And of course, what happened is we began to prepare for that. This wind blew down upon us and breathed upon us. In fact, I was talking to one of the other brothers who was there, John, and he said, oh, that was profound. I was wondering if it was noticeable to him. He said, oh, that was profound. He said, it was very exciting when it happened. And then, of course, as we laid out, a dog ran through in front of me, and we didn't understand at the time what that meant. Later on, we realized it was the Caleb, the dog, the female portion of the Genesis 15 account, which would equal to the oven. And so I then walked between these covenant parts, which would be the flaming torch. And you say, oh, Gary, the natural man would go, you're a bunch of kooks. And frankly, we made sure and did it when we didn't think anybody would come by and look, because, you know, how do you explain something like that? That is kooky. It is certainly foolish. And yet, when we did it, and it was not spectacular, and I didn't try to make it super spiritual, it was just go out and do it is all I knew to do. We effected that covenant, and looking back later on, realized that Yahweh God had carried out a covenant, a higher dimension covenant, according to Genesis 15, instead of the lower dimension covenant that you see in Zechariah 4, where the male passes between the split covenant parts of the female. The lampstand going between the two olive trees. Genesis 15, you got something different. You have an oven and a burning torch. The female and the male now going between split covenant parts. Oh, this is much higher. Again, though, foolishness. Foolishness in the eyes of the world. And I know that. And yet, so profoundly revealing. And it was extremely revelatory because it was because of that that I even began to understand this Genesis 15 covenant and what it means. It means the millennial reign between the works of Christianity, which opened up our eyes to see in Zechariah 6, where you have Yeshua building his temple between the Bronze Mountains. And here we were at Red Rock Canyon in Colorado Springs, and there were these large red rocks on both sides of us, attesting to the same thing. Now, were we really standing in an intercessory place in which the natural becomes something profoundly significant? I mean, you ask yourself this question. What is so profound about Yeshua sitting down with 12 men and telling them that from this time forward he will not drink from the cup until he drinks it new with them in the kingdom of heaven, and then going out into a garden, the garden at Gethsemane, and praying three times that the cup pass from him, then taken to the cross and equally three times rejecting that cup, and then in the very end, just before he was to give up his spirit, he said, "I am thirsty," and he drank from the cup. You tell me, in the realm of the natural, isn't it very simple and foolish, so much so that people didn't even understand what he was doing until the bride came along? Isn't it incredibly simple and foolish that the God who created the heavens and the earth would do something so cloaked in simplicity and hidden as to not drink wine and make a commitment not to drink wine and then drink it? And the scriptures say, having all things having been fulfilled, he said, "I am thirsty." He drank it, and he gave up his spirit. Something so simple as wine. God, the creator of the heavens and the earth, went back into the garden of God, the Garden of Eden, intercessorily, identified with that original garden and that original sin, and placed himself in a position where he can then die, come up from the grave, after 3 days, go into heaven and stay there 8 days and come back and give the kingdom to man. And he did it all through not drinking wine. And that's foolish. That is foolish in the eyes of the world. God is going to redeem man, and he does it in such a simple way. Did you know that Gethsemane means oil press? You say, it's interesting. Well, that makes sense because he went to the Mount of Olives, and it would make sense that there would be an olive press there. But it's interesting that Gethsemane is that word shemen. It's that oil, that fresh oil. So it was where that shemen would be pressed out. Which is exactly what Yahweh did. Through Yeshua's acts, the Garden of Gethsemane, the Garden of the Oil Press, did that work in being at the cross. He later brought forth the shemen, the fresh oil, some 49 days after Passover, on Pentecost. Foolishness. foolishness. God going to a cross as a Nazarite and not drinking wine, and this is going to be this profound work among men. No, he came in foolishness. It baffles me to look at creation and the wonders and the marvels and the intricacy of creation and think that Yahweh God would come to man in foolishness. Oh, Gary, I'm going to show to you that you're going to get the curse of 1920. You're going to get to the root of the curse of 1920. And as you walk through the edge of your garden, you're going to put up a weed with a 2-foot root on it. 2 feet long. My, it sounds like 2,000 years to me. Does it not to you? Foolishness. Foolishness in the eyes of man. It's really hard to serve a God who uses the foolish. Except for some of us, it's really easy because of our actions. But he doesn't use the grand. In fact, Yeshua said himself, that which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. Luke 16:15. Huh. And yet, churches will put businessmen on their boards that are respected. And they come up with plans. Do you think Yahweh God is really impressed? He was speaking concerning the Pharisees there. That which is highly esteemed among men is detestable in the sight of God. You tell me the difference between the Pharisees and the way the churches act and operate themselves. Yahweh uses the foolish to shame the wise, the weak to shame the strong, the things that are not, that he might nullify the things that are. Recently I had an experience. It would be kind of like that weed. As I was sitting there on that floor, playing the card game, I wanted Yahweh God to speak to me in some way, to assure me that he was going to provide that which we have, which is the shemen from the oil press. And after I got through playing the card game, I had the cards in my right hand, and I asked Yahweh, I said, Father, can you speak to me and show me? Show me that you're going to do these things. Can you speak to me? And admittedly, with a bit of frustration, because frankly, it's a hard thing to serve God. Really hard. It's a hard thing to know what Yahweh's doing. He hides himself. He clothes himself in a mystery. And as I sat there and knowing the difficulty of knowing God and knowing what he's doing and knowing the great necessity that he do something, after asking that, I took the cards and I tossed them over to my right against a filing cabinet here by my desk. And I just tossed them over at the base of the filing cabinet. And then I looked over there at them and I went, kind of like whenever that 2-foot taproot came out, I looked at those cards and I thought, oh no. Oh Father, is this you? Or is this just me? Is it just a happenstance? Would you really do something like this? It's frustrating for Yahweh to use the foolish things to speak to our lives. If you go to remnantbride.com, and I'm going to tell you what to put in your browser address, go to remnantbride.com/ and type in there also CARDS. So it's going to be remnantbride.com/cards, CARDS .MOV. Now I will tell you in advance that it must be a little bit larger file than usual, because be patient. Give it some time to load. It will take a little time. It is less than a minute. But when this took place, I looked at it and I analyzed it and I thought, wow, this is incredible. And the more I thought about it, and even afterwards when I talked with people, the more I realized how profound it truly was. Now, when we filmed those 12 one-hour teachings on the Kingdom of Heaven series, we had to buy a little Panasonic camera as a second camera. And I had it with me, and I'd never used it. Jim was the cameraman on that camera, and I wanted to record these cards. So I had to go get the booklet, read how to even run the camera. And I took the camera and was successful in recording a little movie of it. And that's what you're going to find at remnantbride.com/cards, C-A-R-D-S dot M-O-V. I wanted a record of it because it was too profound, and you will see it. And I want to explain to you, in fact, there is one thing that was just too profound for me to ignore, and that's really what caused me to go ahead and record it. Again, this is foolishness. Profound? Yes, the foolishness. We're talking about a deck of cards, an old deck of cards that I hold together with tape. In it, you will find that there is a handle on the filing cabinet. Somehow, when I toss those cards off over to the right on the carpet, a card elevated itself, went up on the handle, and was suspended in the air on that handle. That card was a king. It represented, obviously, the king of glory in heaven. Now, who is he coming back for? He is coming back for his bride. She will rule and reign with him for 1,000 years. That's obviously a queen, right? Down below, immediately underneath the king, which was elevated on the floor, were not one, not two, but three queens that were showing. So already we see the testimony of Yeshua in heaven, who's going to come for his bride, three queens. Someone asked me, well, why three? Well, the only thing that I can conclude is that it is perfection. It's like Father, Son, Holy Spirit. It's like faith, hear, believe, act. It's like you, your mind, will, and emotions. It's completion. It's wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. It's completion. So we see the completed bride. Now, what is it that brings Emmanuel to this earth? Well, we already know that it is the Moses work that is the first remnant. They provide the legal means whereby this is to take place. It's like the first bird that was killed in Leviticus 14, I believe. The first bird that is killed, its blood is spilled into an earthen vessel, and the second bird is dipped into it and ascends alive. Well, the first bird is the first remnant. They pay the price. They're the Moses work that doesn't get to enter in but pays the price. And, of course, it is the Elijah company, the second remnant, that actually brings Emmanuel. They come in the millennial reign. They bring about Emmanuel's coming in the millennial reign, in the third part of the church. Of course, the first remnant, they're in the first part of the church. Isn't that true? I mean, they're at the very beginning. First 1,000-year period is where the first remnant is. Now, we have learned that the seven is the mark of the beast. It's Christianity, the seven-branch lampstand. The eighth is the Moses work that reverses the curse. Moses went up on the mountain 7 times. Yahweh said he would not go in with them. Yahweh changed his mind and sent Moses up on the mountain the important 8th time. 8 reverses the curse. It's the Moses work. And then, of course, the 9 is the fulfilling Elijah work, as 600 years later, Elijah fulfilled the promise that was given to Moses concerning being hidden in the cleft of the rock, or standing there with Yahweh, being hidden in the cleft of the rock, coming out and seeing Yahweh's back. Now, let me explain to you what the cards did. Off to the right a little bit were two cards laying down on their backs. An eight, and underneath it an ace. There's the eight. That's the Moses work, the first remnant that died, and they were in the first 1,000-year period of the church. An ace was under them, a one. Now, on its edge, behind it, immediately behind it, is a nine. And sitting upright behind the nine is a three. It's really quite interesting. The eight and the nine are both black. And the ace and the three are both red, matching up. So you have the testimony of the first remnant that dies as a Moses work in the first 1,000-year period, and the second remnant, which is a nine, the Elijah work in the 3,000-year period. After I got through filming it, the next day, I picked up the cards. All the other cards that were below it were all face down. There were no other cards showing. There, behind the nine is a card. You don't know what it is for certain. It happens to be a king as well. It's like the Elijah work is backed by the king. That's amazing. The Elijah is the fulfillment of the sun-clothed woman in Revelation 12. She is clothed in the sun. She has the office of Yeshua. Call me insane. Call me crazy if you must. But behind this nine is the king. Not all of him. You can see his crown. And of course, in the sun-clothed woman, she had 12 stars in her crown representing the latter rain 12 apostles. The king was behind the nine, and the king must be behind the office of the Elijah. Oh, it was profound. Profound. The testimony was inescapable. Undeniable. But foolish. Gary, come on. Guy, you're letting a deck of cards be a testimony of Yahweh God. Why don't you just go to the casinos if you're that good, Gary? Ah, you're foolish, Gary. You're foolish.
Yes, I know it. But you know what?
In every detail, including the king elevated into heaven, those cards prophesied. I was talking with Chris afterward. And frankly, I decided at that point I was going to record this, but I wasn't going to tell anybody. It's just too foolish. It's just foolish, cards. I don't want people trusting in cards. You know, what are they going to start doing next? If they start thinking that God speaks in all these things, and they'll start making things out of nothing. You know, yeah, take that risk. Yeshua said, if your eye offends you, pluck it out. He didn't worry about those who might actually pluck out their eyes. He spoke truth. You know, it's not right to deceive yourself and think God's speaking through something and he's not. But folks, if he uses the foolish to shame the wise, how can you deny that he's doing something? When I was talking with Chris, I said, you know, Chris, a person could throw those cards like I did the entire rest of their life. A 1,000 years they could throw those cards. And they would never, ever produce what was produced after I asked Yahweh to show me, to speak to me, to show me something, to encourage me that he's going to accomplish this. You look at the little movie, and you'll see how profound this is. I didn't touch any of this. The way it's recorded is exactly what I saw after throwing them, and I knew it was too profound. to deny that Yahweh was doing this. Yes, I was frustrated. I saw how profound this was, and yet so foolish. A deck of cards? Yahweh God would answer my prayer through a deck of cards? Gary, you're a kook. I wasn't going to tell anybody. If all of this worked out, I was going to point back and say, look what Yahweh did. He spoke it all in advance. But I also knew, I said, Father, back in 1994, I said, Father, if you tell me anything, I'm going to tell it. Don't tell me anything that you don't want others not to hear, because I'm going to tell. And I thought, you know, I'm going to tell. I told Jim McManus. After telling Jim, I went ahead and told Tommy Tillman. Then I told Chris Meyer, and then I told Rob Jackson. And now I'm telling you. Oh, I think I told Tom Dore. I just briefly mentioned. Well, I did tell him, but I did not show him the movie. These other gentlemen, I showed them the movie. I told them the link, and they could go to it. Now you can go to it, and you can see how profound it is. It is profound. But is Yahweh really going to do it? That we have confidence in. But we wait to see. Here's another testimony concerning that I realized, and maybe it's even more profound. It came to me afterwards that probably one of the most important things about this whole thing was the fact that in its foolishness, it revealed that if Yahweh God uses us, yes, He will use the foolish once again. He will use the weak, the despised, the things that are not, that He might nullify the things that are, that no man should boast. An old, worn-out deck of cards, held together by tape, soiled, fading. That's us. If Yahweh uses us, which, for the sake of the world, for the sake of the kingdom, I pray He does. If He uses us, He will be using an old worn out set of cards in a very foolish way of providing testimony, and yet, profound testimony. That is my hope. That is my hope, that Yahweh is going to use us, and He will do a work that is beyond man, that He might receive the glory. One of the greatest concerns we should have is that we start thinking that we are worthy of the accomplishment. There's a story about a woodpecker. I never forget this guy. He's up on a tree, a tall tree, elevated above the forest floor. And he backs off his head in a typical form, and he hits the tree. At the same time, a cloud is overhead. Lightning bolt comes down, hits the tree, and knocks the entire top of the tree out. And it goes crashing to the forest floor. The woodpecker, wide-eyed now, backs off, looks at it all, and says, "Woo-wee! Look what I did." Worn-out cards tossed across a room, hit a filing cabinet. Prophesies amazingly. God used the foolish, the weak, the things that are not. Oh God, speak to me. Gary, this is what's going to happen. No. Deck of cards cast across the floor with a bit of frustration, and they prophesy immensely. I pray that He uses us, and I pray that we will not be like that woodpecker. We will realize what we are. If you ever begin to be used by Yahweh and the bride, you ever start thinking it's of you, I want you to go to rentitbride.com, cards.mov, and I want you to look at those cards and the foolishness of that. I want you to always remember what you are. Foolishness. Recently, I went to a family's home. They're lowly, meek people. In the eyes of the world, they're foolish. Yeshua said that when you identify with the lowly, you identify with Him. You're not going to find Yahweh's favor by boastfully standing in the front of a camera or pulpit and building a great edifice. And as in Luke 16:15, you have all of these things that are highly esteemed among men, the very things that Yahweh detests. You can't provide enough to impress Him out of your flesh. Our hope is that Yahweh is going to use us, but I also know that the way He uses a man is to reach down and use the lowly, the things that are not, that He might nullify the things that are. Do you qualify? Are you ready to be base and qualify? I'm reminded of how Yahweh used a raven in my life, and I mention it because whenever I went out to see that family and spend the weekend with them, and we enjoy fellowship together in their mobile home out in the country, hidden away, there were a whole bunch of ravens. In fact, there were probably more ravens than I'd ever seen before gathered on the ground in one place. They were in the road right in front of me, and as I came up over this hill, all these ravens, just a great number of ravens on the road, and the dirt road. I had no idea why they were all there, but they were all gathered there, and they all rose, and I rolled my window down so I could make sure and then hear them call. The raven, you know, the Elijah. You know, the ravens fed Elijah, and Elijah's the one who actually occupies the place that beforehand belonged to Satan. But I was reminded as I prepared to come to you that there was another foolish thing that took place in my life. I had a raven. In fact, I had two ravens. And my raven, I'll make the story short, my raven flew all the way across town, several miles away, a few miles away. And he had full plumage. He had all of his feathers. And he flew over to a house, stood on that house a few miles away, and called out to a window, a bedroom window. I got a phone call, and the girl that I had begun dating said, "Gary, is your raven out?" And I said, "Yes." And she said, "Is he there?" And I went outside and looked, and I said, "No, George is here, but not Louie." She said, "There is a raven outside my bedroom window calling to me. Is it yours?" I said, "Well, you know, we were going to have a date that evening." I said, "Well, come over right now and see." And sure enough, there was Louie. He waited for me to get there, which is incredible. A raven with all of his feathers. He could have flown off at any moment. He waited for me. I got there and I called him 3 times to come with me. He wouldn't go with me, so I told him bye. That raven miraculously flew across town and landed outside of a window, the window of the woman that I would marry. That raven identified my bride and called to my bride, and she came out of the house. That raven could have flown 360 degrees in any direction. It was about as likely that that raven would fly all the way across town and land outside a bedroom window and call to the person in it as it was that these cards would be thrown off to the side, just haphazardly thrown, after shuffling them, thrown off to the side, and they prophesy the way these did. Yahweh God uses the foolish to shame the wise, the weak to shame the strong, the things that are not, that He might nullify the things that are. So now you know beforehand. If Yahweh God uses us, and I pray He does, if He uses us, May we always remember what we are. We're the foolish, the weak, the despised, the ones who are not, that he might nullify the things that are. Well, I invite you to go and look at the movie, if you haven't already, cards.mov. You'll see what I'm talking about. Also, I trust at this point, as you listen to this broadcast, that you have read the writing, Making Cain Clean. An incredible writing, extremely revelatory, seeing things that have never been seen before. And also, if you listen to this broadcast during this last week of October, I want to invite you to come to my home in Salem, Missouri. We're going to gather on November 2 in hopes that Yahweh is going to give us his Sheman, give us the latter rain, give us power. We hope that's what Yahweh is going to effect in our lives, and we invite you to come and be a part of it. It's November 2 here in Salem, Missouri, and you can call me or email me at gary@remnantbride.com. If you want the number, you just go to the website, remnantbride.com, go down to contact, and you can call me. And let me know that you're coming. We're going to gather together on Sunday, November 1, so that we're all together for the day on November 2. And most of us, most of those who are coming, and they're coming from all across the United States and Canada, we will continue to gather up through Trumpets, which is November 5. It's an amazing thing that this consummational Pentecost fell on November 2, which is a count of three 49-day periods from June 7, and just 3 days later would be Trumpets. So we invite you to be with us. Now, are you coming to some grand event with these impressive people? No, we're common people. But we invite you to come. Yahweh will use the weak, the base, the things that are not, that he might nullify the things that are. Those whose hearts are as his heart, and that we long for his establishment of the kingdom of heaven on this earth in righteousness. That Yahweh God would use a people for a period of 3 years, from Trumpets of November 5, 2009, to Trumpets in 2012, and we would bring Emmanuel to this earth. So may Yahweh God use the foolish. May he use you and I. May Yahweh God do good towards us. And may Yahweh God give us his Sheman, that we might bring Emmanuel to this earth. I hope to see you November 2, and we look to Yahweh to effect his work. Yahweh bless you.